Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, August 5th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 302. I have a super special guest, actress Jess Salguero from Orphan Black, The Strain, and tons of other shows. Super excited to share that conversation with you, and I will do that in a bit. Right now, I feel like I should just talk to you and let you know how I've been, how my week's been, you know, just to check back in on you guys. I'm sitting here recording this intro. Got ESPN on mute. They have this, I didn't know this existed. They've got like senior league, little league, senior league softball. So I don't know how old these people are. I think they're young women from Ebbets Field in Lower Sussex, Delaware. Okay. I didn't know they did this. Maybe these are high school age girls playing. So before that, I was doing some pre-production work, and I always say that Sunday mornings and afternoon brunch time, you know what this thing is, you know what this programming is, I think ESPN has like from like in between like 9, 8, and 2 o'clock. There's a block that ESPN has for like stuff that's gonna make dudes cry at the beginning of the week while nobody's around. Me, I live alone, so it's perfect. So you can just like cry home alone and get a good cry in to start off your week. I think most dudes need a good cry at least once a week. ESPN has this program and like this thing, especially this is a real like this show, like E60. Anything that Tom Rinaldi talks about with pianos behind it. Any kid that's like overcoming a sickness or a disease, or if somebody's poor and they just like rise to the occasion, there's like an athlete reliving their childhood, or somebody that's, you know, succeeds against adversity. A lot of that shit comes on early, like brunch time. So I think where all the ladies are out going to brunch, these guys, because ladies for the most part, I'm just going to make a generalization. You guys are a little more in touch with your emotions, and you're very warm and caring. Your default is, I think. I'm going to just err on the side of a positive stereotype that you all are a little more in touch with your emotions, and men with our toxic masculinity, we don't know how to harness it for the most part, and then we have to let stuff out in ways that aren't that great. So ESPN's programming on Sunday tries to get guys in touch with that. There's this show called My Wish, which is basically Make-A-Wish kid stuff, where a kid that has like cancer, they're sick with something, some disease that could be life-threatening, and they overcome it, or while they're sick, they get to meet, you know, their favorite athlete. And so this one, this week, thankfully I wasn't that locked in to be super emotional before I recorded this intro. There's this one kid that got cancer, and he got to hang out with Aaron Judge. Another kid was sick, and he got to hang out with Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler was teaching him how to play dominoes. So that was pretty neat. What else? Some kid got to meet the Arizona Cardinals. So I'm thankfully, and then one girl got to meet Jordan Spieth. I think I had seen that before, and she looked like she was growing her hair back because she had cancer, and looks like she's in remission and all that good stuff. I didn't cry during that, but I did watch Terrell Owens' Hall of Fame speech, and I got emotional watching that. I cried a little bit watching that. I didn't realize that it was his third go around he was denied twice. He was not denied the Hall of Fame twice. And I remember probably 3 years ago, when he didn't get inducted on the first go around, I kind of went on a little rant about it. And whatever it is, it's like 3 years ago around this time, or like a little earlier, because this is the actual induction weekend. But anyway, just go rattling off all his stats. Great player. Was kind of a douche, but wasn't really that harmful. Maybe like, I get the stuff with his teammates, not the greatest teammate. But it was his own way of like him striving for greatness. The stuff that guy did on the field, like 2 months after you have a broken leg and you're playing in the fucking Super Bowl, like he's incredible. One of probably the third best wide receiver of all time. Jerry Rice. I don't know who's got the most stats. Randy Moss or Jerry? Or Randy Moss or Terrell? I think Terrell's a better wide receiver than Randy. I don't know. But he top five wide receiver, at least in the top three. And you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's because the writers want to create this narrative to demean him because he didn't really play ball with them. God forbid you don't be the most perfect person to the writers, but you played your ass off on the football field. So that was pretty good. And I had watched his reality show. I think it was on VH1, maybe 10 years. He was playing with the Bills and he was doing a reality show, and I watched it, and you kind of got kind of got under the hood of who he was and a lot of the insecurities that he had as a man, and how that kind of dictated his life. But he's not a bad person. I don't think everybody makes mistakes. I don't think I don't remember any reports of him beating his girlfriend or anybody he was seeing. He's just kind of bratty in a way. And then like, people love all this shit about pro wrestling. This football shit is entertainment, you know? It's entertainment. It's supposed to be fun. And yeah, he just didn't play ball with them. And I think I'm going to get into some, Kaepernick stuff. I'm in talks with the homie Randolph Terrence to talk about some stuff this week. So I think he and I will be talking about that. But and I saw I didn't see all of Randy Moss's speech, but I'm going to watch him. But Randy Moss had a few of the people that were murdered by police on his tie, which was pretty dope. And so that was cool. So this week, comedy wise, well, last night I went to see the homie Vlad Camaño, who's a very dope stand up comedian, New York born. He's now based in LA, and he was performing down the street from me at Bananas Comedy Club. So I went down to just watch his set because I hadn't seen him in a long time, and he killed. But I went there as a fan to watch him, and he's like, "Oh man, come do the show. Come do a guest spot." And I was like, "Ugh." And I did it and I killed. I had a good time, but I was nervous about doing it because I had on shorts. I had on nice shorts from Destination XL, which were pretty fucking sweet. But I just, you know, it's a stand up no-no to really do a set in shorts. You have to have on like pants. And I was in my head about that, but overall I had fun. It was a great crowd. I did like 6 minutes, and it was fun. It's nice when somebody sees you after the show and they're like, "Oh, I wish you did longer. You were so funny." So that was nice. That means that I handled my business and I had a good time. If you want to see me do a longer set, there's some shows that I have coming up. The big show in the distance, about 3 weeks away, I'm going to be at Proctor's Theater on the pretty much the best comedy show in Schenectady, New York. It's their 4-year anniversary. I'm super excited to come back to do that show. Not only be asked to come back to the show, and it's their anniversary show, and it's going to be super fun. Darren Patterson's going to be there opening, and it's going to be a fucking delight. I'm going to try to go to the restaurant that I wanted to go to last week, and I got shut out of it because it was closed for a private brunch. So I'm thinking about I'm gonna make that happen, and I'm probably going to call them to see if they're going to be open. How about I do that, Chris? How about you be an adult, a responsible adult, and call this place? That's a message for myself, so whenever I play this back before that show, I'll remember to do whatever. So I'm super excited about that. Next week, next month, less than a month away, I'm going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina, the Black Guy Who Tips live show. I'm going to be starting the festivities of that, be doing a set in front of Rod and Karen and bringing them on. That's going to be huge. That's going to be one of the I'm not going to jinx it. It's going to be a fun time. Maybe I'll save the mushy shit until after the show, after, you know, it goes well. But I'm super excited about that. That's on September 20th. That's right around Rod's birthday. So I'm going to be in Charlotte. So come to that. There's still tickets available. All the VIP tickets for that show are sold out, but it's going to be a good time nonetheless at the Blumenthal Theater for Performing Arts, Blumenthal Center, one of those. So get tickets for that. You can go on the website. You can go on the Black Guy Who Tips website to get tickets for that. And then another special event, is it next week? It's next week. Wow. So next week on the 15th, I'm going to be in Philly. If you live in Philly, I'm going to be opening for the big homie JL Covan, his album taping. He says it's his last taping, but it's bullshit. He said he's always complaining that he's going to quit comedy, but he's not. He's going to be recording his album, his quote-unquote final album called Thoughts and Prayers, and that's going to be at Helium in Philly at 8 o'clock on the 15th. So I'm really excited to open for JL. All the shows, all of the albums, his last two I've opened for him, and they were both good. His crown jewel, Keep My Enemies Closer, I opened for him. That was about 5 years ago, I want to say. And I opened for him, a couple years ago? And then this one. So they're all going to be good. Whenever I'm his good luck charm. When I open for him, he kills. And it's going to be a great taping. And I think the after party is going to be at Cheesecake Factory. So we'll see. Super excited about that. And then, what else has been going on with me? Yeah, I had some auditions this week. You know, that's part of the job as an actor. You know, I had a good audition on Monday. When you audition for something, you do the thing and then you just forget about it. But then my manager's like, okay, they want to see what dates you have open. Are you free on this day? I'm like, I'm free if these guys book me, I'm free. So just book me. But I think there's I'm in the running for it. So I didn't know it was that hard to pick juror number 12, for a few lines on a show. Hey, I'm excited. If I book it, I'll be excited. I'll show up. I'll deliver my lines. I'll do my thing and I'll be happy. But I mean, you know, it's juror number 12. It doesn't have to be that. We'll talk about it later. And then I had an audition for another show I'm excited about. We'll see what happens. But I'm excited. And I think I'm at the point in my life where I want to give it my all when I'm doing the audition, then forgetting about it, but then just leaving it up to the people that make those decisions. I had fun doing them, and that's all you can hope for. Let's get to Jess. Let's get to somebody who's more successful. Let's get to Jess Salguero. Jess is a terrific actress. She's been on tons of shows, and we talk a little bit about her origin story and stuff like that. But I found out about her, I think it was when I was watching her on Channel Zero. She was with Aisha D from The Bold Type and some other stuff. And I was like, oh, she's good. And then I saw her in this film that I blab about. I kind of gush over her performance, and I get a little nerdy in this episode. Just be forewarned. I saw her in this indie flick called Mary Goes Round, and there was one scene that she was in, and she blew it out of the park. And I hit her up on Instagram. And I was like, you're really good. Can you do my podcast? And she so kindly obliged. She's so, so nice. And she's on the show. So this is my conversation with the very lovely, talented, the terrific Jess Salguero. Enjoy, folks. Okay, so it's always awkward, like, starting these things where, like, I've been doing it for like 5 years. And then, like, we're like, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this. And then when I press record, I'm like, so it's just that initial starting point. So are you?
Oh, my God. It's all good.
Are you in? You're in Canada, right?
I am. I'm in Toronto.
Toronto, home of
the Six.
The Six, home of Drake. And now are you in?
What else?
Are you in the sport? Are you in the sports at all?
No, but I know, like, you know, Raptors are good. Maple Leafs.
You guys got Kawhi Leonard now. I don't know if you know about
right.
This.
No, you know what?
Okay.
Hey, the only reason why I know this is because I was working with an American on a show on a film I just wrapped.
Okay.
I wonder if you know him. His name's Alphonse Macaulay.
No.
He's like a total Vine star turned like actor.
Okay.
Got like a million followers. He's hilarious. He's great.
All right.
Anyway, he told me all about that trade and how Kawhi is the basketball player's name, right? Kawhi?
Yes, yeah.
And that he's like super bummed he's like got traded to Toronto or something.
Yeah, like his picture, like there's a picture of him with the general manager and the owner or something, and he just does not. Kawhi Leonard is a very like humble, he doesn't have any expression. And he
right.
And there's some picture. There's a picture of him when he first got there where he just looks so sad and depressed. That
my God!
But it's like, I mean, hey, you know, like it doesn't seem. I've never been to Canada, so it seems
really.
No, I haven't. It seems seems like it would be fun. I mean, I just don't know. Like, I have a buddy that works for the Toronto Star. That's a sports writer up there, and he's been on the show.
Mm-hmm.
A couple times, but did you just get done? You just got done with a film, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually just wrapped two films.
Okay.
But the one I worked with Alphonse on is called No Sleep Till Christmas. It's like it's for Freeform.
Okay.
It's like they're making original movies now.
Okay.
So it's like it'll be out at Christmas. It's like a rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just finished something called Instar Emergence.
Okay.
Do you know Ron Funches? Or
I know of him. I haven't met him personally. Okay. I know he's
right.
A funny dude. I did see you guys on his Instagram. He, yeah.
Yeah. I play his girl, like his, well, I'm not sure in it. Come on, I don't know if I'm turning it.
Well, it's another,
I play his like it, love interest in the film.
Okay. So it's another reason for me to hate on him. Okay.
He is such an angel, I gotta tell you. Like, me and him had such good deep chats. He's like the real deal. He's a good person.
I know he's a fun, I don't like, he's, I'm a New York comic, so he started out in I think in Portland. I think he's like
Portland. Yeah.
Like he, I think he grew up in Chicago for a little bit, then moved to Portland. And he kind of when he blew up, he went to L.A. So yeah, I just haven't crossed paths with him, but he seems like a super nice guy, and he's
funny. Oh man, his origin story is pretty wild.
Yeah, but I was gonna say enough about him. I want to talk about you. So you just got so two films. Like you just was that like back to back that you just
It was actually luckily the schedules worked out really well that I filmed it overlapped too.
Okay.
But often like that doesn't happen. And especially it doesn't happen that the dates work out really well, but but they did. I got really lucky. And it was great. They're both comedies.
Okay.
I've been doing just like this year has just been nonstop comedies. Well, that's not true. Actually, I'm in a film that's in the Toronto Film Festival this year. And
is that Mouthpiece, the one that you...
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Is that one of your... Now, what is Mouthpiece about? And then just as much as you can talk about it, and then like how it relates. Because it's a big deal because it's the Toronto International Film Festival is a huge deal, right?
Yeah, and it's also opening the festival.
Wow, okay.
It's a beautiful story, actually. Yeah, I'd love to talk about it. Well, it's about the death of this young woman's mother. She dies suddenly, and the legacy that, I guess, the legacy that we inherit from our mothers, the good things and the bad things.
Sure.
I play her best friend, who's helping her through the grieving process, and it was a really really powerful project. It was actually the origin stories of it is also fascinating. It was a play that two women wrote and performed in Toronto. Their names are Nora Sedeva and Amy Nostbakken. And Jodie Foster happened to be in Toronto filming an episode of Black Mirror.
Yes. Yeah.
And she went to go see this play and thought it was brilliant. So she brought it to Los Angeles and they did the play there. And then when they got back to Toronto, this pretty veteran, very successful Canadian director named Patricia Rosema, who's like won the Prix de Jeunesse at Cannes and everything. She also saw the play and was like, I think I can make this into a movie. And then 6 months later, we're filming the movie. And what's wild about this is these two girls are like never done film or TV. They've never had any ambition to do film or TV. Like they are theater artists, like creators. They both went to movement/clown schools. Like one of them went to a school called Jacques Lecoq in Paris, which is all about like clowning. So anyway, it was just like so amazing working with them because there was like zero ego because they never wanted to be movie stars. They don't want, you know, that was never their intention with any of this, you know, it was amazing. And they were so good. And it's a really beautiful, creative, profound story. I'm very eager to hear how people receive it. I actually saw someone who went to one of the test screenings and she was like, I had to leave in the middle of it. And I was like, why? She's like, I've never cried so hard in my entire life. She's like, wow. I'm so embarrassed that I had to leave. So anyway, it'll definitely be a tearjerker. Anyway.
These two women were first time filmmakers. What was that like? Because you're an experienced actress. So what is it like when you're doing something with a first time filmmaker? Do you feel like sometimes the burden's put on you to make sure that you have like you have your shit together and at the same time like you're carrying this film, or what's that like?
Right. In this case, not at all, because the director is, I mean, she's very experienced, like legacy director. that the two girls who
writers
starred in it, okay, and wrote it,
okay,
with the director, they adapted it to a screenplay together. They are excellent actresses, right? So it's not as if they've, you know, when I say first time film and TV, yes, first time in front of a camera. However, these are the characters they built, they wrote, they know this like the back of their hands. They were the best scene partners, really, also because they're not jaded by film and TV. I feel like sometimes in film and TV, you learn little tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'll be like, oh, it's not my close-up, so I won't give it all, my all. Or,
yeah,
oh, I know the camera is most, this shot is going to be of my scene partner, so I'm not going to, like, you know, really go for it and really be emotional. These girls, because they've never done this, don't really know those tricks or whatever, so they were giving me everything all the time.
Wow.
So it was such a gift as a scene partner, because I was just like, oh my god, like, I feel like I'm doing a play every take. Like, you're so there, you're present and not holding back anything. So that was a serious, like, gift, okay, for me, 100%. Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
cool. So you're just,
yeah, it's like,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No. You go ahead.
No,
I'm good.
It just seems like, so that seems like a really fun experience. And then you always have to be present in the scene and make sure that you're,
mm-hmm,
okay. That's really cool.
It actually made me step up my game so much, you know, okay, where I was like, wow, I am acting with they're so accessible, like, so emotionally accessible, so brave.
Yeah.
And not concerned about things that sometimes you start to get concerned about when you do movies. Like, is this my angle? Is this lighting okay? Or is my makeup, do I look oily? Like, stuff like that you don't want to think about.
Yeah.
But sometimes will enter your brain when you've done it enough, and when you've watched your footage enough, you're like, oh shit, you know, someone just put a cloth in my forehead and be less shiny.
Do you think, is that again, something that you think about? Because it seems like this, the stuff I've seen you in, I want to get into it a little bit, but just like,
mm-hmm,
it seems like there's no like you don't care about vanity at all. Like, you're just like locked in, and in a good way. Like, you're just,
oh, thank you.
It just seems,
I really,
like,
appreciate,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Cause it's like,
go ahead. Do. No, I really appreciate that. I do my best,
mm-hmm,
to not think about it.
And it's,
there are moments, yeah,
but it sinks in. Cause it's sort of like, cause I know sometimes, like, if you do something, like, you do a scene or you do a play and your friends see it and like, oh my god, that was so great. And you think, and sometimes you can think to yourself, I didn't nail it. I don't think I nailed it.
Yeah, totally.
Why did they pick that one? And you're like, but it's sort of like, I guess, like, what are you thinking about? Like, is that something that you have to be, is that something that you have to be aware of? Or do you just get to the point where I'm doing this scene? Cause you've worked for, like, you've been in a lot of stuff. So,
I know what you're saying.
What are you thinking about when you're on set, when you're just like, when you get there, like, okay, this is okay, let's start here. So I the reason I reached out to you, I saw you on Mary Goes Round and,
yeah,
the Aya Cash movie, and it's one of my favorite genres of movies, where, because it's like a white girl that fucks up and she's got to get her life together and then she goes back to her hometown and tries to figure shit out. And it's like one of those movies where it's just like, I kind of know where this is going, but your role, like, you,
mm-hmm,
it's like you were, if it was any other movie, your character probably would have been somebody that the lead character reached out to. Like, it was just like,
right,
so much life in that, in what you did. And,
oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm not like blowing smoke up your ass, but it's just sort of like, oh, this is this is something different. Like, this is like, talk about that character. You play a character at,
sure,
like an AA meeting.
Yeah.
And And you, so you're,
yes.
What did you do? Like one or two days on that movie?
I did one. You know what? There was another scene that got cut from the film.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That it does come a bit full circle. Your instinct that she does reach out, like there, I come back at the end, and anyway, her and I kind of heal things, and she like kind of is like, hey, like, can I take you out? You know, whatever. It's a beautiful scene. I think the film ended up being too long, so they had to cut it.
Okay.
But yeah, I play. We were kind of you know, rumbling with the idea that she is probably like a sex worker.
Oh.
And wow. she's trying to get out of, but definitely has substance abuse problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's you know, there's a lot of addiction and you know, in her case, and this is not the case with all sex workers by all means, but in her case, she felt that she wasn't respecting herself and wanting to get out, but just kept in this cycle, you know, the merry-go-round thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, working with Aya Cash was super fun. She's like super cool, really real, like mm-hmm. really real chick, which I loved. And, yeah, so, like, it's funny. If I'm thinking about, you know, the actual process of being on set and what I'm thinking when I'm playing cards, the better I get at it, so the older I get or the more experience I get, the less I think about.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the days that you can leave set and go, wow, I really, like, you know, I was as present as I could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
Those are days when I feel going, I leave feeling really good and being like, I did my job.
Yeah, because it was just, it was, I'm sorry, I think you were going to say something else. Oh, I thought you were going to, So it was just like, thinking about that role is something that I've been trying to get used to a little more, where it's like the stuff that I have like a theater background, but I've just mm-hmm. now starting to do more SAG stuff. And like the stuff,
awesome.
Yeah, the stuff that I've been booking, it's just like you do a couple lines, you do your thing, and you get out of yep. there. And it's just sort
those
of
those are
like,
the hardest parts, though.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like I just have to get over myself and say, yeah, they hired you for the job, and you just do what they tell you to do, because it's more as much as like they care about what you do, but they don't, because it's more of a director's and a writer's medium, I guess.
Totally, and also like to add to this,
sure.
My first real like consistent TV gig was on this hospital show called Saving Hope, and I played a nurse, and I would come in every episode, and I had like one line
mm-hmm.
for two seasons. I'd just come in and I'd say like "Follow me" or something. that job was harder than almost any other job I've had because of exactly what you're saying. The director often, you know, doesn't take much time with you, and then you think, oh, maybe I'm doing it wrong, or like you start getting your head about this one damn line.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's not really that important to the story. You have to remember that you're feeding the lead story. Like
mm-hmm.
it's not all about you. It's about the lead. And this is just you supplementing, you know, and creating a, helping the plot a bit, but it's their story. That's what the audience cares about is them, you know?
Yeah.
So once I realized that, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I'm essentially like, at least on that show, I was like, I'm kind of like, you know, a background actress that has lines.
Yeah.
And to be fair to them, they did give me like some great, like juicy bits of plot, but a lot of episodes are just me literally coming in for a moment, but I learned so much on that. And, one day this, so fast forward like a year or something, I'm still on the show, but I'm on a show called Working Moms. It's a Canadian, comedy. Okay. And, I have like a recurring part on it. So I'm going into my third season now. And I saw someone I knew on set. This was in the first season. I saw someone I knew. It was her first TV gig.
Mm-hmm.
And she had one line. And she was, like, super nervous about it. She's like, oh, you know, like, I've never been on a set. And I'm like, don't worry about it. It'll be great, blah, blah, blah. We're doing a take. And the scene was actually with me.
Okay.
She's doing a take, and she forgot her line. And she was like, oh, my God. And then after, she's like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Like, I can't believe that happened. Like, why am I even here? I can't remember my one damn line. And I was like, girl, you have the hardest part, because you don't know anyone on the set. You're coming in, like, you know, not comfortable.
Right.
The director is freaking busy and unfortunately not really taking the time to work with you, you know, because we're like, we're shooting outside, we're losing daylight, like whatever, all these things. And also you don't have any momentum, and you don't really have a character, because you're just a punchline, because it's a comedy. It's like you're setting up a punchline, and I feel for you. And just as soon as you remember that, you know, you're about feeding the story. It's not about you.
Right.
As much as I adore you, you know, it's not about you. It the better this will be for you, and a better experience, because yeah, those ones are so hard, because you get in your head. You go, like, follow me, follow me. No. Follow me.
Yeah.
Follow me. Follow, you know, and you do it a million times, and you're like, oh my God, I could play it a million ways, and then you get messed
up. It's so funny, because when you go to auditions, like I've been getting to the point now where I know when I was a lot younger, like, I would think, like, oh my God, this could be it. This could be the thing that takes me to the next level. And you go to the audition, and you're just like, sir, do you need anything? And that's the one line, and that's it. And you just, like, your whole day is, like, built around. And they're just like, okay, thanks. And you're like, that's, you sure you didn't want anything else? You didn't think you needed any, you know, want me to do? Nope, that's it. Good. And you're just like,
I know.
And you're just like, all right.
I know.
So I want to talk a little bit more about, like, your, I always like to kind of get under the hood a little bit with a performer. Like, can you just talk about, because it's so hard, like, I saw you in Channel Zero, which you were great in.
Cool.
But I didn't like how they, I didn't like how they did you in on the show. But
oh, I died.
Yeah. And and then, like, I'm trying to think other, like, I saw the I guess it's harder because it's I'm in the U.S. and I can't get to, like, check.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like,
all good.
No, it's just, but all I good. Like, but when I saw, like, I just randomly, like, with Mary Goes Round, I think I had seen, like, I don't know how, I saw some promo stuff and I saw, this looks pretty cool. And I ordered it on Amazon and I saw you on there. I was like, oh, shit. And it's just like, can you talk about, like, from the audition process for that role to, like, to filming it? Because it's like, it's a role like that. Because you actually, like, mentioned that it was there was a scene that got cut out. But, like, just coming in and, like, hitting your mark, nailing it, and doing your job. Can you just kind of talk about that process?
Sure.
Yeah.
I actually auditioned for this via self-tape.
Okay.
So for those that don't know what that is, it's like when you don't actually go into the room to audition, you, like, send a tape of yourself doing the sides. Because why was that? I forget what was going on that I didn't go into the room for it. I don't know if I was working on, like, filming on the day that they were doing audition. I forget. Anyway. Or maybe they didn't have it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, and the friend that I read the lines with, who was helping me tape, she knew the script, because at TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival, that year, Molly, the writer of this film, had pitched this script.
Okay.
In a program called Pitch This, which is a big deal for young filmmakers here, because they help get you funding for your film, and also I think they'll, like, you have a good chance of getting into the festival too after it's made, something like that. I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, she did the pitch and she didn't, I don't think she won, but my friend thought she should have won. She was like, this script's so good. Like, mm-hmm. you know, her name is Molly McGlynn. She's like, Molly McGlynn seriously should have won. And so anyway, I got to read the script with my friend and she was so into it. She was like, this script's so good. Like, we're going to do this audition. Like, she really, like, you know, coached me. She was yeah. like, you got to get this part because the script's great. So, and, you know, with stuff like that, I've always resonated with characters who are really going through their pain. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because I'm a Scorpio, but I don't mind. I mean, of course, I mind it. Who doesn't mind it? But I'm not as afraid of my shadow self as. Sorry, I'm outside and someone's rattling something.
What does shadow self mean to you? I don't know.
I guess I mean the side of oneself that isn't the side you like to present to the world.
Ah, okay.
You know?
Okay.
It's the insecure, the vulnerable, the scared, the weak.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I've always had quite a close relationship with that part of myself, I guess you could say. Like I've always kept a diary every day, every single day, Chris, since I was five.
Wow. Written
diary. So I think that also just helps me kind of create this dialogue with myself where I wasn't scared of, you know, these different elements. So when I read Crystal, when I read this character, I was like, oh yeah, I get this. And I like the opportunity mm-hmm. to go there.
Yeah.
Because often, I mean, you know how it is. Like, can I take your order, sir? It's like, yeah. you don't necessarily get the opportunity to really go there.
Yeah.
And, that's part of why I'm an actress is because I want to help, I guess, show people and myself and that we don't have to be so afraid of ourselves. You yeah. know, it's, and the closer we are with those not so attractive parts, the healthier we end up being and the more we can help other people too. Like if you can only really look at someone else's pain if you can look at your own. And so yeah, that part just when as soon as I read it, it jumped off the page to me where I was like, yeah, here we go.
Yeah, that's real shit.
Because yeah.
that's something that I try to do with acting and especially with stand up is trying to deal with those demons and try to wrestle with them, and then make it palatable for a general audience. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I think when you take those risks like that, because that part is a meaty role, and it's one scene that we see in the movie. But that character has like an inner life. It's sort of like, it's almost like a soothsayer part too. Like, cause where it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, he's like, yeah, you probably got your degree online. And then the next,
yeah.
and like the next cut is her, like Mary looking at it, it's like her online degree. And it's like, oh shit. Like you had her number, and that's what made it.
yeah.
It's like one of those, cause that was like one of her, I think in that movie, that's like one of her first wake up calls or one of the major ones.
Yeah.
Obviously she gets in in the trailer, you see that she gets in an accident and all that stuff, but
mm-hmm.
it was sort of like,
mm-hmm.
so you're thinking all that stuff and you relate to it. And then did you just book it? Like, did you just book it from the tape that is your manager?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I did actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. I was actually in. That's what it was. I was filming Channel Zero. That's so funny. I was actually filming Channel Zero in Winnipeg.
Okay.
When I found out, and I was already planning on, I had a flight already booked. I was going to Germany for most of December, and I actually flew back from Berlin to just to film that part.
Okay.
But what was actually also lucky is I ended up booking a part on this TV show called The Strain, and came back for a week from Germany and filmed that film, and then the next day was filming The Strain. So anyway, it all worked out.
They just took, I've never seen that show, but they just took it off Netflix. I was just going to at least watch your arc, but they took it off here in the U.S. I don't know if it's,
they took it
off,
the
off Netflix, but
it's never been on Netflix here.
Okay.
Actually. Yeah.
Go ahead. So you book it, you book it off the tape, and then what's it like? What was it like on, did you just do like one day of filming?
Yeah, it was just one day, and that was the first time I met or talked to Molly, the director.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about this is, like, it was low-budget indie, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, ideally, the director has a bit more time and can, like, you know, talk to the actors about what's going on, but
sure.
This was like a labor of love, and you could tell on the set, which was actually really, I also adore that, you know, like, I love the, like, family coming together, not literal family, but, like, filmmaker family coming together and, like, making this on a tight budget, but we're gonna do it, you know?
Sure.
And I think all the actors in that film really gave it, you know, like, really believed in it, and you can see it, like, they, you know, no one's getting paid big bucks to do that, that kind of film, you know, it's, you got to do it because you love it,
right,
no one's getting rich is what I mean.
So you're just ready, and then you just knocked it out of the park, and just another day at the office.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well, she was, I mean, Molly's an excellent director, she really is, like, she's so accessible, and, like, you can talk to her about anything, and she's also just, like, she's just great. She is killing it in Canada. Like, she's working on, like, all the big shows here, directing episodes. I'm, like, really, really proud of her, because, I mean, she had developed that film in film school.
Mm-hmm.
She made it as a short, I think, or a teaser. She made a teaser for it, or a short, or whatever. And then I think, like, pretty soon after she graduated, she made it into a feature. So it's pretty amazing. And also, it's a lot of young Canadian filmmakers, female filmmakers, look up to her as someone who's kind of really made a name for herself.
Okay.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then
she's, like, very respected here.
And you just built all the, you talked with her about, like, what you thought, like, her back, like you were talking about earlier, like, she might have been a sex worker and all that. Okay.
Yeah. I think it might have even been in the breakdown.
Okay.
I can't remember now, but yeah, definitely. And, like, yeah, we talked about it. And what I liked about it too, is she really just let me go. You know, she let me go for it. She didn't give me too much direction off the top. She's just like, let's see, you know, like, let's just see what happens, you know? And I actually like that.
Yeah.
Especially with emotional stuff, because sometimes when you get a bit, you know, direction heavy,
sure,
you can get in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And forget really what's happening in the scene. So, yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's so cool to see how everyone works differently. It's like,
yeah,
everyone works so differently.
So that's cool, because I think that you brought up a really important point about that, like, the vulnerability and, like, that, and, like, really dealing with the dark side. And it just makes you, I think it makes you a healthier person. So how did you get here? How did it start for you? So where did all the origin story stuff, like, where is?
Well, I grew up in a city called Winnipeg.
Uh-huh.
Which is, like, in the middle of Canada. Some Americans don't know what it is. It's kind of a joke.
Is why Winnipeg a joke?
Okay, any Winnipeggers that hear this are going to, like, hate me forever. Winnipeg is a very, 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 very cold city. It has actually the most extreme temperatures for the highest population in the world.
Okay.
And it's in the middle of, like, nowhere. It's kind of in the middle of Canada. And it's this weird place where there's, because it's so cold and there's so much snow and wind for, like, a very long time, like, at least 8 months of the year, usually. It's, like, winter, not necessarily snow, but it's cold.
Wow.
You're a bit isolated, right? So it creates this kind of, like, there's a weird culture there. It's kind of amazing, though. There's, like, been lots of prolific punk rock bands that have come out of Winnipeg, and lots of musicians have come out of there, I think, because there's not much to do but, like, play guitar in your friend's basement. But honestly, I'm happy I grew up there, because it was me and my friends just constantly pulled pranks, made, like, you know, little plays, sketches, videos. Like, we just always entertained ourselves. So I grew up there in Winnipeg, and my parents both emigrated from Portugal.
Okay.
I have two older sisters who are quite a bit older than me. They're like 12 and 10 years older than me. And
wow. Okay.
I think part of why it's really interesting. Like, I've found that the reason why I like acting, or why it has so much to do with being a little kid in a family of kind of adults already, and everyone, you know, having, like, arguments and whatever. And because of being a kid, having this, like, kind of naivete about the world still, where I would look at them fighting and be like, oh, that person's actually just sad and wants a hug, but they don't know how to say it.
Mm.
Like, you know, kind of this beautiful childlike innocence of looking at it and being like, oh, my mom's just really tired and she thinks that no one appreciates her or something, you know? It was like,
what age were you when you were like that? What, you were that, then, you, like, were that perceptive at that young?
Well, yeah, I was probably like, I mean, when I'd start really understand it, it probably was like, I mean, I feel like I was, again, I was writing my diaries, so I'd have to look back at my diaries and see what I was thinking. But I feel like I was just observing it, because I couldn't partake, because I was still a kid, you know? And
you don't remember how old you were?
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, this is just the way I've made sense of it now as an adult. I mean, I feel like I was probably, like, I don't know. I feel like I was kind of understanding this stuff even at, like, 5 or 6 years old, where
wow.
You can just sense that someone's sad, but they're acting angry. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Being like, they're really sad, you know? And so, anyway, my being, I guess seeing this stuff and I've now seen it as sort of a gift, because it's helped me kind of, I feel like it helps me understand the subtext.
Yeah.
Like, people can be saying one thing, but really they mean something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or really they're just covering up and they're layering over how they actually feel, which is so much about being human. Like, that is human. We do it all the time. And good actors, I find my favorite actors, are people that see those layers.
Yeah.
Like, see, like, you know, they're not actually, upset with their spouse. They feel actually insecure because, you know, they can't keep a job, you know, or whatever. Mm. Like, I don't know.
No, that's real. No, that's real. Cause sometimes that's hard to impart to people, where it's just like, even now, like, my parents, or especially my mother, like, I can understand where she's coming from. and you can understand like her psyche. Like if she's upset about something, it's like, Mom, well, it's because of this. She'll say, you don't understand. You don't have any brothers and sisters. I'm like, well, Mom, that's on you. Like I didn't, you know, it's not on me.
Right.
And like I'm in debt for trying to understand human emotion. You know what I mean? Like going to school for this. This is what most of my life has been dedicated to. And it's like this is like, yeah, it's how do you deal? Because that's sort of like a superpower.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful that you say that, because truly I have, like, as of this year probably started to see it as that.
And not to say, and sometimes it's a power that fucking hurts, but it's like it's like it is. And then sometimes you only get to wield it in performance. And it's kind of hard to harness. So like when you were What was that like when you were a kid? So, like, what did your mom and dad do? Were they into the arts at all?
No, my God.
Okay.
They're like classic immigrants. Like, no way. They like had their own business and
what kind
selling
of business?
Furniture.
Okay, all right.
Selling furniture, and they worked their asses off. Like, if I can say anything about them, they showed me how to work hard. They worked so hard, and they really. They really like love their culture and their country. And like, we spent lots of time, around the Portuguese community and in Portugal and stuff. And so it was, and also the thing about Portuguese people, they're like other Latin, you know, Latin cultures, like Spanish, like they're very emotional. They're very, like they are so expressive and, you know, passionate and jealous and angry and all of the things. So I remember growing up, like my friends, my like, you know, perfect little like suburban white Canadian friends would be like, we don't like coming to your house. Like, why? They're like, it's too loud. It's too loud. I'm like, yeah, I know. As a kid, I mean, of course the thing is, when you grow up, sometimes you don't know any different, right? You're like, this is my family. This is like, I don't know. This is just this is my reality. I don't know that it can be any different.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's really powerful. I actually was just with my whole family in Portugal a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And we haven't been together in 6 years, like all of us in the same place. And there was so much healing that happened. And I think the only way that the healing could really happen was because we've spent lots of time apart now as adults. We all live in different cities. And now we can kind of look back and have a bit of distance from it and look like at it in another way, like, oh, you know, I don't have to try to get my sister's approval all the time. I'm an adult and I'm okay and stuff like that. But yeah, as a kid, I mean, it's funny. I'm just learning more and more as an adult how much, you know, it's affected me. I think we all are kind of unpacking all of our childhood as we get older.
You're absolutely right. Cause it's like every time I go home, like I live in New Jersey and I'm like in the New York area and whatnot. And my parents are like 3 or 4 hours away. And every time I go home, it's almost like I just assume the role of son. And it's just like I'm an adult and it just you still feel like that kid when you're around those your parents or whoever knew you when you were growing up. You change, but then some of those other your family members don't really change.
And sometimes they don't like you changing.
Yes. And do you feel like this sometimes there might be a resentment or even though you even though you're just like evolving as a person, and then you've taken hopefully like the good things that they've taught you and you're putting mm-hmm. that into practice. And sometimes it's like, I'm getting into arguments with my parents where it's like, hey, you guys raised me to be a halfway decent person. And so mm-hmm. I'm trying to navigate this the best that I can. And I think I'm doing a pretty mm-hmm. good job. But it's just sort of like that is a thing. Like,
even to see how much further we've probably come along than I'm like certainly my parents and probably your parents too, and that you're even curious about mining this stuff in yourself.
Yes.
You know? Where we can have more of a language surrounding it, and like, you know, it's encouraged even in our culture to implore the like to be curious about this. This is right. Like what a big evolution from our parents' generation. But yeah, no, I feel you so hard on all of that.
Yeah,
I'm actually learning how to have compassion for my family and also boundaries.
Yes,
like to be like, I understand you're doing the best you can, and like, you know, I love you. I understand you. You know, from all of your experiences, this is who you've become. And now, but I also need to protect and respect myself too, and not let you, you know,
right,
wear me down.
Oh my God! That's
You know what's amazing, Chris?
Yeah,
they are like. It has been such a journey, like over the, I swear being an actor is so helpful with this stuff. Like, mm-hmm. because this is what we do all our, like, you know,
yeah.
this is what I do in my classes. This is what I do, like, hopefully in the characters I get and stuff. So it's been such a journey with my family, and I can see them changing now. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
That's what a reward, like.
Yeah, there's,
I really see it.
There's a lot to unpack with what we're talking about now, because it's sort of like what I'm realizing. Like I turned 38 this year, and what I'm realizing now is that the older I get, the more that I appreciate my parents. They're always like, they're good mm-hmm. people. Everybody has their flaws. They're human, but it's like mm-hmm. When you're a kid, if your parents are good and they're good parents, you look at them as like these superheroes that they can't do anything wrong, and they take care of you, mm-hmm. they nurture you, blah, blah, blah. And then when you get older, you realize like, oh, my dad is just a guy. Like he's like my mom is just he's just a dude. And then like that, they both made some decisions at a club like 50, 60 years ago. And then here I am. I remember when I was a kid, like my parents are from North Carolina, and we'd be driving home.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be funny how, because my dad would stay with his mom, and my mom would stay with her mom and dad. And sometimes I'd go, you know, I'd see them both. But then like they'd come back, and they would always get into fight. Not all the time, but they would get into these fights, like driving home. And I would be in the back seat. And it was just like, oh, maybe they, like, now I'm just kind of realizing, oh, maybe they were dealing with some shit from their mm-hmm. past. And then they're kind of, like, dumping mm-hmm. it on each other. And it's just, mm-hmm. like, I can look at that now and think about
yeah.
that. But there used to be this club, the club that they met at. Like, every now and then mm-hmm. we would pass it. And they would say, oh, that's, mm-hmm. that's where we met. And my mom would say, I wish I never set foot in that club.
Oh no!
And they're celebrating 50 years in a couple weeks to being together.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow! Wow! Wow!
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So it is amazing when you actually are in a house with them, and the way they are with each other. But
yeah,
I think that's just like that's some real shit where it's like you have to have. You have to have some type of outlet, whatever it is, to just kind of deal with that. And so, like, as uh-huh. a kid, so when,
uh-huh.
how did this evolution happen for you? Your parents are working class; they have their
yeah.
own business, and they're uh-huh. about like really. And my parents were the same way. Like, my parents were both laborers, and so uh-huh. when it came to me, like, I realized maybe about 12 or 13 that. Maybe like 14 years old in high school, where my listeners know this, but I thought, like every black kid, you think you're going to play in the NFL or the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I'm just going to play basketball. I'm going to play sports. And I wasn't as good as I thought I was. And I remember trying out for the freshman basketball team. And I got cut after the first tryout. I knew I got cut, and I didn't even look at the list. And I realized, like, I was like, maybe I should just do theater. Because that was the thing that I was consistently good at and where I got the most respect. And then I just kept I kept mining that. So what was that like for you? When did you come to the realization that this is who I am?
I also got to say, about the basketball thing, I was just listening to Jay-Z on Oprah's Masterclass podcast.
Okay.
And he had the same revelation. Like, he was also wanted to be an NBA player and then realized he wasn't as good as the other kids.
Yeah, I remember. But anyway. No, that's real shit, because I remember seeing, like, these guys dribbling under their leg, just doing, like, crazy crossover and one mixtape stuff. And I was like, I think I'm going to audition for the musical.
That's actually interesting. It's almost, so I have a similar situation, but with dance.
Okay.
Going back, I mean, I was, aside from being a, you know, reflective diary writing child, I was super hyper. And my mom didn't really know what to do with me. So she like started putting me in dance class just to like get my energy out or whatever.
Sure.
And I really loved it. And I think I thought I was probably going to be a ballerina one day or something. Mm. And I wasn't as good as the other girls, but also at the same time, I was discovering my love of just performing. Like,
and how old
I loved
you?
The theatrics. I probably started dance when I was like six. Okay. I started piano.
Okay.
But my family always talks about, okay, in grade six, my school did a musical and I auditioned to play the lead girl part, which is a princess. And I didn't get the part. Instead, I got the lead male part, which was like the hero, which is actually the star of the whole musical who saves the girl.
Okay.
And I remember being like so confused at the music teacher being like, but I'm a girl. And she's like, yeah, but we think you can do this. Like, this is a better part. And yes, you're playing a boy, but it's okay. So I, you know, rehearsed and learned a bunch of songs. And the whole time I did it in secret. Like, my family didn't even know. And then when the show day came, I told them, like, I'm doing a play at school, and they came, and afterwards, they were all, like, jaw-dropped, like, what the hell? Like, we didn't even know you could sing, or that you could, you know, comfortably act on stage for an hour and a half, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it was really that moment they all say that they were like, oh, she's going to be an actress. Like, she has a talent for this, I guess. And then my sister even says, like, her husband now, but at the time her boyfriend came to see it, because they would have been, like, already, like, probably 20. And, or even older, 22 or something. Anyway, they were like, she said her boyfriend turned to her and was like, you didn't tell me Jessica could sing. And she's like, I didn't know she could. Like, I had no idea. So anyway, after that, they were like a bit more supportive of me, you know, being this artistic child. And then I, you know, felt like I couldn't be an actress. So I went to university for...
Why did you feel like that?
It totally just seemed to... I had no reference points, you know, except for movie stars. There was no one in my family who was artistic, not even a musician, like no one in any way.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, was business, like entrepreneurs or laborers or pretty much that, either like construction workers or they have like a small business.
Gotcha.
And so I just didn't think it was possible. And then I was actually in university, but I was teaching dance, like, on the side, for money as a job. And one of the dance teachers one day who had gone to school in Toronto for theater was like, "You don't want to live in Winnipeg, do you?" And I was like, "No." And she's like, "You want to be an actress, don't you?" And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Can you do me a favor and yourself a favor and audition for the school?" The school's name is Randolph. Okay. She's like, "Go audition for Randolph. And if you get in, go. Get out of here. Like, get out as fast as you can."
Yeah.
And so I auditioned, got in, and like never looked back. I was like, I was like, "Oh my God, it felt right in every way." And it was really hard. Like my dad was so not supportive. Like he was like, you know, he's like, "You're too smart for this. This is stupid. Like you're just going to, you know, you can just make plays while you work. Like, why do you have to do it for your job or whatever?" Mm-hmm. And then it slowly kind of like was like, "Okay, fine, whatever, live your life." And then I moved here and I ended up at the end of my, it's like a 3-year program that's like you do a play, a big play in a big musical.
Okay.
And we did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as our play.
Nice.
And
who were you? Who'd you play?
I played R.P. McMurphy, like Jack Nicholson's part. Again, what? I played like a male role.
So Canada's like super progressive.
Yeah, I guess.
Was it just like...
We also just had too many women. We had to like cross cast it.
Okay. All right. So this is like, was this like, were you like 18? Like, was this like college?
Yeah, I was like 20. I was probably 21.
Okay. Did you do, like, while you were teaching class, were you going to school? Like dance?
Well, when I was still in Winnipeg, yes.
Okay.
But then when I went, the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was like my final college production.
Got
so
you. Okay.
It fast forward like 3 years when I'm in Toronto now and I do this play and it was really a great production for a college production, like sincerely. And my dad came from Winnipeg and saw it. And after that, he's been like my biggest fan. Like he's actually probably the one person in my life who would never let me give up.
That's like the movie.
He would be like,
that's like the movie moment when he's like, I get it now.
Like,
that's cool.
Yeah. I won him over like in this way where he was like, "Yep. Okay. I believe in you." And now it's so funny. He's actually so proud of the fact that he is so like progressive. He loves saying like, "You know, my daughter's so passionate about what she loves. And like, you know, I get to, I'm so happy that my kid is so passionate and she does what she wants," you know, whereas you know, rewind like 12 years ago, he was like, "This is the stupidest thing you could ever do with your life." But
That's great though. Like I was fortunate to have parents that were for me and everything. But I noticed like almost 10 years ago when I started doing stand up, you start off and you don't get paid for anything. And you're just like, you're just driving all over, not getting paid, going to open mic, going to shows. And like, my parents are like, "What are you doing? You're putting all this wear and tear on your car." And like, I had one of those, like as understanding as they were, but like, I had like blowout moments where I was just like, "You don't understand, Mom. This is who I am." And I'm like 31.
Totally.
And it's just like, I was like 31 at the time. It's like, "You don't understand me." But when they saw, like, they always believed, but I think within the last like couple years, I think more people start to, like, they always believed, but I think things are starting to crystallize a little more where they see like the fruits of their labor. Because I couldn't have done it without them, like literally, like financially and like supported, like, you know, supporting the same way. Like my dad, he told me like, "Well, you're in New York, you're here to do show business. So you need to reevaluate."
That's awesome.
Yeah, like he told me that about like 5 years ago. And I was like, "Oh yeah, you are right." So, so that's good. So it took you, it took two, what is it? What do you call it? Like cross
production,
cross-dressing performances to get your parents to believe in you and to see. Yeah, that's great. What is it? I know we got to wrap it up soon. What is it? What is it like for you? Like, I know, like within the last couple of years, people have been talking about diversity and all this stuff. Like, as a woman of color, do you see those changes made in casting? Do you see that the industry's trying to go for that, or what do you, how do you see it?
Yeah, I do. It's funny. There's a lot of things to work out about it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's great to bring on people of different cultures, ethnicities, races, colors, and but I hope also that it's not just to play, you know. Okay, for example, and God bless it, I'm okay, like, whatever. But probably 60% of my auditions, truly, are for tough Latina cop.
Okay,
like, you know, from the streets, from the streets, she, like, loves her neighborhood. And, like, yeah, that's cool. But what about, like...
I love that that's a stereotype. She loves her neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. Like, really passionate about her, like, abuela that lives down the street, right? So, that's, like, that's cool and everything. And,
sure.
I mean, those are great stories to tell. And I think that's part of the process.
Yeah.
But I do hope we get to a point where we start to not see, you know, color in the in that way, and that you can just be the leading man.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a conversation that, you know, you're African American and the leading man. It's like, you're just the leading man because you're right for the part.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to see it happen, which is cool, I think. Yeah, I'm an interesting case because I'm pretty ambiguous.
Yeah,
like, people don't really know what I am.
It's like, you're
people,
exotic.
Yeah.
Do they say that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, some people try to put me in a box of, like, you know, you're Latina. No, you're not Latina. You're Portuguese. Okay, yeah, I'm Portuguese. You're biracial. And it's like, well, am I biracial? Like, I don't know. Like, also, I have a lot of, like, orphans in my family that we don't actually know where they're from.
Okay.
So anyway, it's
sure,
like,
yeah.
it is a bit of a mystery, and it's a funny thing for me to navigate, to be honest, because, you know, I don't want to, I've done it before, but I don't necessarily want to tell someone else's story if there are people that really are great actors and can tell it, you know?
Right.
Like,
right.
Okay, cool. Like, I don't want to play Turkish if my friend is a Turkish actress and she's great and right for the part. Like,
right.
Okay. You know, like, she'll know it more intimately anyway than I will.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I do think that in general, we're moving kind of in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And even for female parts, like, that's a huge thing. Like, whereas I see them being written in a more dimensional way.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was like, you're the tough chick, or you're the, you know, the dumb chick, or you're the smart chick. Like, you're not, like, you can't be all of those things, kind of thing. And now I'm seeing characters where they're just, like, really full and alive and real, and it actually reads like someone I know, or it reads like me, or it reads like, you know what I'm saying?
Sure, definitely.
Yeah.
Is it different? Because you do U.S.-based projects and Canadian. Mm-hmm. So is it, because people tend to have the misconception, or they believe, like, there's no racism in Canada.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, that's not true. Canada, you know what? It's different. It is different. We have different issues.
Mm-hmm.
we don't have the same legacy of slavery as America does.
Right.
You know, because we didn't really have like African slavery here. We had a different kind of slavery. We had First Nations, like Aboriginal, you know, indigenous people slavery. And also, you know, during World War II, Japanese people in internment camps, and also the Chinese people. Well, there's different issues in Canada.
Right.
Big time that, like, our dark scar on our country is definitely our treatment of the indigenous people and the racism towards them. That's like a real thing that, what's really exciting actually is I do see more of their stories being told, and I do feel a real initiative from the government here and from, like, you know, for example, the Toronto Film Festival, they have a lot of, consideration about, making sure that there is, you know, indigenous filmmakers being accepted to the festival. And, you know, I'm a TIFF Rising Star this year, which means the festival picks four actors, to call their rising stars.
And you're one of them.
Yeah, I'm one of them, which is amazing.
That's like, awesome.
It's a really amazing honor. Seriously. They just announced it yesterday at a press conference, which is cool. So now I can talk about it.
That's great.
But one of the other girls is Mohawk, and she grew up on a reservation in Quebec, like, outside of Montreal. And, she's really passionate about telling, you know, the story of her community and of her people. And I was like crying listening to her and yesterday, like it's really powerful stuff. And so, but yeah, sorry, you asked about racism in Canada. Yeah, there certainly is. It is a bit different though, because I feel it when I'm in LA. It's like a different, it's different.
Well, speak on that. Like, I mean, I don't know, because it's just like, I would be remiss if I, like, having a woman of color on the podcast and not asking about it. Like, you know, like, what do you, because it's kind of corny, or it's kind of like cliches. And what is it like being a woman of color in the industry? But I think your voice needs to be heard on it. Okay. Anyway, what is it like? Right. What's the difference?
Well, I mean, when I said I feel it, I actually don't even mean as well. It's funny. I haven't spent enough time there, I think, to really understand how I'm being affected by it, if I'm being affected by it. Mm-hmm. But I will certainly say, I see the race divide there so clearly, like, especially like with the homeless population.
Okay.
And with the, you know, like all the laborers, whether it be, you know, landscaping or construction or anything that's requiring like physical labor, even being a cook in the kitchen, like all Latinos, like just overwhelmingly that group, you know?
Yeah.
And that is something you would never see in Canada. It would never be that overwhelming. You would see all different kinds of people working. And for, you know, I actually said this once to an American, I do feel like in Toronto, in downtown Toronto, I could go for dinner with, you know, a black guy, an Indian girl, a Chinese guy, a Aboriginal woman or whatever, people of all different races, different genders. And I would have no idea how much money people make. And it wouldn't even enter my mind who would be making more money than anyone else.
Yeah.
Like that, like it really wouldn't. In downtown Toronto, it is super multicultural. And I don't see a race divide the same way I would see it in LA and in many places in the States that I've been to. You don't see it the same way. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's not to say there's not problems here. There is.
Oh yeah, no, I've heard things, yeah. But it's just like, it just seems like they're, I know, like, as an American and, like, just generalization, like, you see, it seems like more of a utopia, and it's a little more, like, it seems like there's more, like you watch a show like Orphan Black, where it's like, okay, these people are different, you know, like, it's just like,
right.
And it just seems like, you know, just aesthetically, they look different and all that stuff. And it's
totally,
it seems like it's more accepting, and you guys have the universal health care. Yeah.
Yeah. That, see, actually, like, that is a huge difference, mm-hmm. because you're not afraid of one another in the same way. Like, when I was in the States, I got in a car accident, and I was like seriously afraid that I was going to get sued. Like, I was like, oh my God, because it was my fault, right? I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get sued. In Canada, I would never think about that, because first of all, the person wasn't injured. It wasn't like a huge deal, but our healthcare takes care of us. Mm-hmm. So you're not worried you're going to go bankrupt, or you're not worried you're going to have a $10,000 bill from going, you know, to the hospital or whatever.
Yeah.
That'll never happen.
Right.
So you don't need to be living in as much fear of each other, because there's no reason to, kind of.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So there is like more of a, yeah, I get it.
Kind of like a, I guess it's just less dog eat dog, you know?
Yeah.
Because you don't need it. You're going to survive. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
It does seem like it can be, like, if you're in something, it's hard to look at it at a macro level, but like while you're in it does kind of seem like it's dog eat dog, and you say, well, this person got this thing, well, what am I doing?
Yeah,
I think like the older that I get, I'm trying to keep my eyes on my own paper, and not.
Yeah, I think you're probably doing an excellent job, even hosting a podcast.
I'm trying. Well, thanks. Like, I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to put the communications degree to use, and, you know, talk to cool people.
Yeah.
Talk to cool people like yourself.
Uh-huh.
How is? I guess, and then we'll wrap it up after this. How?
Yeah.
What is it? So we talked about being a woman of color and all that stuff. How do you think? I want to talk like briefly about like the Me Too movement and the Time's Up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How has that changed? Have you seen any changes in the way people have been behaving? Because I think at one point it just seemed like the stories, like Gabrielle Union said this, I think earlier this year or late last year, like talking about how the Me Too movement is mainly a movement for white women, and only those stories seem to get the coverage, where it was like I remember Lupita Nyong'o said something about Weinstein, and like she was the only person, like her and I think Salma Hayek were the only people that he actually responded to, like he kind of clapped back at them, but then all the white women he didn't say anything about, like it just. Are you seeing like people be on their best behavior now? Are people? I mean, you know, like what's the climate? Because
Great question. Important question.
Yeah, and I'm not just trying to be like you know, like people like Henry Cavill said like a couple weeks ago. No, you can't even flirt with women now. And first of all, I'm like, dude, you're Henry Cavill. I don't think you have a problem with that. You just like you could just say I'm Henry Cavill and you're good. But what do you think? What do you think? Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of. I just want you to talk about it.
Yeah, I think men are scared, and so on their best behavior.
Yeah.
That's not to say that women still aren't being totally objectified often.
Sure.
But it's definitely in the consciousness. I think honestly, just men are like so freaked out. It's so interesting. So I was testing for a pilot in LA in March, and I was talking, you know, the producers are in the room and I'm with the lead actor. And this was for like a series, right? Like the new series, female series regular on a show, like for its second season. So anyway, I'm talking to the lead of the show because I'm doing chemistry reads with him. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, I was telling him, like, you know, you and the other actress last season had, like, really hot chemistry. Like, you guys were, like, on fire.
Yeah.
And then one of the producers goes, I don't know how you guys are handling this in Canada, but we're very conscious of the fact that you're the only woman in the room. So we feel like we can't, you know, talk like that necessarily. And I was like, and he kind of said it jokingly, kind of said it seriously.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, okay, wow. Yeah, like this is like, people are freaking scared. Like I'm the one that initiated the whole conversation. Yeah. And I wasn't even, I was just saying like, you guys had really great chemistry, you know, like it was, and, yeah, it was really funny. So stuff like that, where I was like, holy shit, like people are scared. I don't know how this is going to settle. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, I think everything's on fire a bit right now. So it's hard to say what, shifts will really happen. But I do think, men here are generally being careful because they don't want to lose their jobs. And that what kind of sucks about that is I don't know if real change is happening in the way that feminists hope it will.
Mm-hmm.
And that men just, you know, kind of realize that they shouldn't treat women like objects.
Yeah, just treat them like a person. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not because you're going to lose your job, but because they deserve that respect.
It's like, hey, I don't want to lose my job, so I'm gonna treat you like a person. So whatever, let's do this.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's, you know, what's interesting is like there's a lot of men that I think are a bit that I've talked to,
mm-hmm.
like yeah, especially young male directors mm-hmm. and filmmakers. This is not all of them at all. Like the majority are like totally freaking cool and amazing people, but there I have met a few and had discussions with a few that are really resentful of the fact that women are getting the opportunities that they're getting now, like to be in the power positions, to be the directors, and they're, you know, they feel like they're getting their jobs taken away from them.
Can I ask you this?
Sort of thing?
Can I ask you this? Are they what? Are they white men?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh yes.
Spoiler alert.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yes. Which is just so infuriating because mm-hmm. you know, you want to be like, excuse me, you've benefited from the fact that you've been a white male your whole life.
Yeah.
Like you have had the upper hand your whole life. So, you know, don't act like you're the victim right now. You're not.
I think it's
also these people have merit. They're fantastic artists and should get a chance, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway,
it's an interesting thing where it's like, I think people have, there's become this white man reckoning that's been happening. And then I also recognize I'm a black dude, but I have male privilege and I also have privilege as a black man. But I think, you know, I've been saying on the show for a long time, it's just like, we have to have empathy for each other. And
absolutely.
And then when you talk about the feminism, it's just like the intersectionality that has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then at
mm-hmm.
the same time, like there's this overcorrection, like when you're in that room talking about, hey, you guys were great. You guys had this awesome chemistry. You were on fire. Hey, we can't talk about this. No, we can't. So it's just like you got to, I guess we are at a weird time, but I think you can still, mm-hmm. I think you can still get the work done and have fun, because sometimes you forget, like in the everyday hustle and bustle or the grind, all of that shit, it is supposed to be fun, and that's something I have to remind myself. Well, Jess,
that's so true. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, this has been great, Jess. I would love to. I could talk to you for hours. But
I know, right?
I know you got to go. Can you talk about like some of the stuff you got coming up? Talk about your website. Bitches Be Witches. Yeah.
Yeah. Bitches Be Witches is an online feminist publication that me and my friend started. And the whole idea is kind of like a place where feminism meets the divine feminine. So we talk a lot about spirituality, about rituals, about just like finding your intuition and listening to your intuition. Mm-hmm. And also just, we interview a lot of women who we think are healthy reference points for young women, mm-hmm. which is something that was huge for me growing up. I felt like I didn't have like female heroes in the same way as like a lot of boys did.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to kind of rectify that and also just like have fun, like, you know, witchy kind of conversations about like, how do you create sacred space? You know, like if you're trying to heal something in you, in yourself, like be good to yourself and maybe like, you know, create a practice around that, whether it's like, you know, I don't know, lighting a candle for yourself at night or just like a lot of self-love stuff, to be honest. And you know, understanding the nuances in your body and in, especially being a woman, because, you know, we go through huge changes every month and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's like a really, it's been such a pleasure project. It really has. And a lot of like women have gotten involved, and men too. Like men are totally encouraged to be involved. Cool. As well. And that's been great. Okay, as far as acting goes, I'm actually starting my second season on a show called Letterkenny, which is a really hilarious Canadian comedy that's now on Hulu.
Okay.
So you can watch that in the States now. It is freaking hilarious. It is like making fun of Canadian hicks, but I've had people from like Florida reaching out being like, this is hilarious, and like totally, I totally know people like this.
Okay.
So that's been awesome. What else can people watch in the States that I'm on right now? So I'm trying to think. But anyway, it's
you're
a podcast.
On like Channel Zero. No, yeah, it's fine. Channel Zero, yeah. You were on The Bull Type.
The Strain. I know I'm missing something right now. I'm on Condor, which is a new show.
Orphan Black.
Yeah. And I assume the film that I'm in TIFF will be out. It'll get some sort of theatrical release in the States, and I really encourage people to see it. It's so powerful and such an important story. It's called Mouthpiece. Yeah, you can, you know, YouTube it, check out the trailer.
Cool. I'll add all that. Like links to your stuff on the show notes and
okay.
All that. Well, Jess, this has been stay on the line for a second. Jess, this has been great. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you. This was fun.
This was awesome. take it easy, everybody.